Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Welcome to Eco Living in Action, the sustainable living show that focuses on the everyday things that we can do to make a difference. I'm Maureen Howard. At the moment, I'm in Northern Ireland, so I'm actually in the middle of winter. But for you, when this show airs, we've got 3 days to Christmas, and I'm hoping that you have a warm and sunny Christmas in Dunedin. But just before you forget the cold of the winter, please do think back to what your accommodation was like. If it was cold or damp, then I think that you'll find this show useful, because now that we're in the summer, this is the time to think about preparing our flat so that it's warm and cozy. And of course, from a sustainability perspective, it makes a lot of sense to prepare our homes so that we don't need to use so much fuel. My guest, Letitia Nicholas, and I will be focusing on the things that we can do to make our flats warm that don't cost too much and are possible for us to do as tenants. Letitia is a master's student with the Centre for Sustainability here at the University of Otago. She was also co-founder of Rate My Flat, which is an online database where tenants can go to find out about what a rental is like before they sign the lease. And in 2014, during the development of the rating tool and website, she liaised with the landlords for a full year. In this show, recorded on the 14th of December, I talked to Letitia Nicholas about how we can prepare our flat for winter warmth with cheap and sustainable solutions. Letitia, it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
You're in the driving seat today.
I am. It's quite cool.
So, now, you know, obviously you've been focusing on this area of, you know, really trying to have good flats here in Dunedin, but what initially prompted you to, you know, get so actively involved?
I think for me it was a combination of things, actually. Living in rental housing, I grew up in rental housing up in Northland, and I mean, it's not cold up there, but, you know, certainly suffers some of the same issues with not very much insulation, no heating, that kind of thing. Coming through to university, it was a lot colder down here, so that issue was exacerbated. And then the other reason why I got really interested in it was through climate change. So housing is one of those things, one of those really low-hanging fruits where we can actually increase the energy performance of our houses, and it has a great benefit for the climate and really good health benefit, health and well-being benefit. So I sort of thought, you know, this is kind of one of those cool intersectional topics where you can look at all sorts of things, and it's just a win-win type of thing. So it's fun to work on. When it works for a lot of reasons.
It does. It works for a lot of reasons, because not only do we save money, but we our lives are improved because we're warm instead of shivering all the time. And as you say, it's actually having global implications in terms of climate change.
That's right. Like, housing doesn't contribute the largest source of emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, but it's unnecessary emissions as well. So if we could just sort this bit out, then, you know, we can focus our efforts on the hard parts, like transport and agriculture and things.
Now, before we talk about, you know, the flat that we have or the accommodation that we have and how we can improve it, if someone hasn't yet committed themselves to a flat for next year, what tips would you give them to just, you know, how that they can choose a flat that is going to be warm in the winter?
Yes, so this is a really cool time to go around and have a look at the places you want to live. So there's a couple of things to keep in mind. Firstly, the easiest thing is just to go and rate my flat. Self-promotion. Because we've got on there lots of houses that are rated in terms of warmth, price, landlord responsiveness, shower pressure, and soundproofness. But when you're going and looking at houses, the types of things you want to be looking for or asking about is insulation. That will have a really big impact in the winter. So ceiling and floor, walls if possible, but that's not very common. You want to think about where the sun comes in, particularly in the winter, because the sun aspect is really gets a bit low in the winter. So if you've got big trees or other big houses around, you're not going to get as much sun. Other things, is there an outside area covered that you can dry your clothes outside, because that's quite a big source of dampness in the house if you dry them inside. Mm-hmm. And importantly, to talk to the landlord, see what they're like. You know, are they quite open and responsive? Will they, you know, be open to your suggestions if you do find that it's a bit cold? Or are they a bit more closed and not really open for negotiation? Because that will have a bit of an impact if you find yourself in winter needing to make some changes. Oh, the other important thing is heating. Because it's not in the legislation necessarily, it's an extra cost. And so if a house already comes with heating, that's great. And you just want to see if the heating source will be good for the size of the house, because sometimes heat pumps and things are in the wrong place, right in front of a glass door and these kinds of things. So you just want to make sure that the heat pump or the heating source is in a good place to keep your house warm, living areas and your bedrooms.
Yeah. So a lot of the landlords, a lot of the properties on that Rate My Flat?
Yeah, so we have about 2,000 properties in the Dunedin student area. So that was where we launched it to test it out to see if it would work and see if people were interested in it, and they certainly were interested in it. And yeah, students rate their flats, either the ones they're currently living in or the previous one. So it's close in their minds what it was like in winter, and they put up, we've got objective measures on there about does it have ventilation, heating sources, sun, and things like that, ventilation. And then we also have some subjective measures because we know how important people's opinions are as well. And that's like, do people feel like it's cold? Is the landlord good to talk to? What are they like? Best and worst kind of things, so tenants get a bit of a picture of what it's like to live in, which when you're looking for a flat at this time of year, it's hard to know what it's going to be like in the middle of winter when it's sort of hailing and raining and all those sort of things. Yeah, so it just gives and it's got a little map on there, and it just gives you a bit more of a picture about what it's like. But certainly you should use it if you can, and alongside looking at the flat in person.
Right, it's awesome, an awesome service. What's the website address for that?
Ratemyflat.org.nz.
Oh, great, very clear. Okay.
Yes.
So, okay, let's say we're a student and we've already chosen our flat, mm-hmm. booked in for next year, committed. Let's say, what would be the first kind of actions that you would take if you were moving into a flat?
So you'll probably be moving in late January, early February, which is great because it's still really sunny. So one of the first things I would do, as while the weather's still good, is go outside and actually walk around and see if there's like plants and trees really close to the house, because those trap in the dampness and moisture. So that's just an added source of moisture you don't really need. So you want to go around and clear those out. And we did that for our housing project, and it did make a bit of a difference, particularly if your house is two-storied and you've got the upstairs and the downstairs, and the downstairs gets quite damp.
How much of a distance? Like, obviously, you don't have to clear away at all, but...
No, I think I'm not 100% on, like, you know, a scientific
measure. But at least
measure,
get that air movement.
Yeah,
it's
just enough, you know, like 30 centimetres. It's enough for you to be able to walk around, which means the air can flow around too. And then while you're outside as well, if you can see any like overhanging trees that could fill up your guttering, because it needs to be able to move water efficiently away from the roof, so just clearing all those kinds of things out. And some of these things landlords probably should have done over the summertime, but just good to check if you can. And then other things you can do earlier in the year is draft proofing. So you can walk around your house and obviously look for big gaps that you can see and fill those up either with a sort of like foamy stripping material that you can get from the like Mitre 10 or Bunnings. Or you can, so that's for the big gaps, or you can use like old towels or sheets and just roll them up into sort of like little door snacks. The The big gaps would be probably around the doors, especially those older villas that have kind of moved over time. You should have curtains for the windows anyway, so that will help at night time. And if the gaps are really massive, then you should probably talk to your landlord.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because they should really be sealing in those big drafts.
Yeah, and if the gaps are big enough that you need to talk to the landlord, the water probably can get in as well, like rain and stuff, which is not very good for...
and
for
mice and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and like you've really identified, I think, you know, those two... They're relatively cheap, but really important things like doing the draft proofing and then your windows, because we do lose a lot of heat out through our windows, don't we?
Yeah, that's right. So with windows, there's two quite cheap things you can do to reduce heat loss. One is really good curtains. So curtains in Dunedin are really good if they have two layers. So thermal backing curtains, they're pretty good, but it's best if there's a couple of layers, and that kind of creates those little air spaces that trap heat and air. So if you have two layers, so you can put like an old sheet on the back of a curtain, and that does it really well, or nets and a curtain. Plus, at the top, you want to have covered that up. So they're usually called palmets. Sometimes they have wooden ones, but you can also use like a rolled up sheet or towel to just fill the gap. You can also use like bits of wood or an old real estate sign or something like that. And
that's a good idea. Yeah, because they're nice and light and you can cut them really easily.
That's right. And what you're trying to do is stop the airflow, and it creates like this little chimney effect. So you want to stop that. And you can also stop it by having floor length curtains. If you don't have any curtains, the Curtain Bank has recently opened its services to students, so you can get like recycled curtains for cheap or free, I think, and they'll measure them up for you. And the second thing that you can do is put something on the window itself. So bubble wrap is quite good, although you can't see out the window very well, but it's good for external windows that face a wall or something, and that traps the heat in the little air bubbles, and so that's quite good. It's just like double glazing, but way cheaper. And then the other one is the fake double glazing, which goes around the whole edge of the window onto like the wooden or aluminium surface. So there's those two options depending on what you want to do.
And that window film, it's really good. Like, it had the same rating as standard double glazing.
Mm.
That, you know, when they tested it. So
yeah, it's really great. It stays on for quite a long time. Like, I've had it in a few flats, and it stays on. You know, if you put it on at the start of the year when the weather is dry, it will stay on the whole year. Yeah, so it's quite good.
Yeah,
even though it's temporary, it does last for like at least a year, if not more.
Right, and people can buy that at Mitre 10 or any of the hardware stores.
Yeah, it's quite cheap, I think. It's about $20 or $30 for a pack, and a pack could do like a couple of big windows, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
Quite good.
So windows are sorted. I think we've done them.
Yep.
And I guess the draft proofing, well, you talked about doing the big cracks, little cracks, like... you get the draft proofing tape. It's very cheap as well.
And they usually have deals or discounts on all of that kind of home improvement stuff for energy performance at those hardware shops. They're usually always on sale as well, which is nice.
Okay, so those are two big things. What about insulating our body? In terms of, you know, we're often seen, we're in flats and we're wrapped up, we've got our hat on and slippers and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about getting to that level of having to insulate your body?
Well, if you have to, you have to do it. But ideally what the case would be is that the inside air temperature is at 18 degrees, because the really big thing about cold housing is that if you're breathing in cold air, that's the part that's going to make you sick. So anything below 18 degrees in the living room or 16 degrees in your bedroom is going to start to have some impacts on your respiratory system. So you're breathing and you'll probably get cold or get a flu or something like that, start coughing and things. And if it's much colder than that, and you're a bit older or a bit younger, that does have some quite serious health impacts over time. So ideally the room will be able to get to a good temperature, like 18 degrees, but, you know, if you really can't, then, rug up and sit in the middle seat of the couch between all of your flatmates.
Excellent. Yeah. And one of the things I think, you know, when people come to live in Dunedin, I think we should be given a complimentary set of thermal underwear. Because it makes such a huge difference, and you don't realise that you need to wear thermal underwear in the winter when you're outside.
Yes, especially if you're outside. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Any other little tips that you have that are nice and low cost?
Okay, so I have a big list here, but we don't have enough time. But one of the other things I was thinking of was how to... So if you need to spend money on heating, but you don't have a lot of money, you want to reduce how much energy or electricity other things use so that you have a little bit more wiggle room if you do want to put that heating on. So things you can do that will reduce your energy costs is insulating your hot water cylinder, because hot water accounts for about 30% of your household's energy or electricity usage, which is big. So you want to insulate it. So you can, I mean, basically you could wrap it in a blanket if you wanted to, like an old duvet from an op shop would work. But, you know, if your landlord is interested, they could put like a thermal wrapping around it. That keeps it warm so it doesn't take as much energy to heat up, plus the pipes. So a meter from the cylinder to wherever it goes, that's where you want to insulate those pipes as well. So that's good. And then cold clothes wash. That will reduce hot water usage. Shorter showers, which aren't great, but, you know, if you have to, you have to. And reducing hot water usage, things like that. And the other thing was sort of changes in behaviour. So the way that you use energy and live in your house can have a big impact on energy costs and how warm you can keep it. So things like lights off when you're not in the room, turning no standby, because standby is like a silent sort of user of energy, and it builds up over time and you don't realize, but just turning things off at the wall is really good, except for the fridge, don't do that.
But it's really interesting, isn't it? You know, like as you said, it just all accumulates. Like our washing machine is one instance where it's often off. It's most of the time off, but it's still using energy if it's plugged in and turned on at the wall.
That's right. Yeah. So you can, you know, if anything has a tiny little light on it, and you can see it glowing, well, that's using energy. So turn it off until the next time you need it. And all the little savings do add up, especially if you really need to use that money for heating. The other thing you can do is switch power companies. So you can go on powerswitch.co.nz and they will... you can enter in your details and it will tell you for how much energy you use or electricity you use a year, which company can give you the best deal. And some of them have better deals for off-peak time. So when less people are using electricity, they have sometimes they offer cheaper electricity versus peak time. So if you use your washing machine and things during, I think it's 7 to 9 a.m., and 5 to 7 p.m. So those are the peak times when electricity is in high demand and quite expensive. So some of them offer slightly different deals. So it's worth a look for sure.
And even if you don't make a saving, it is a good thing to do as well, isn't it? Because it's the peak use of our electricity that means that we have to dam more rivers and put in more hydro and things like that and use more coal. Because our electricity use as a country requires us to be able to cope with that peak use.
Yeah, that's right. So peak demand is met by like gas peaking plants or coal peaking plants, which are in the North Island, like Huntly Power Station and things like that. So that, yeah, and those are the fossil fuel types. So if you can shift when you use energy or electricity to those off-peak times, then that helps, but, you know, helps with that, solving that kind of problem, which is just like a nice little thing you can do for the climate.
yeah. And of course, as you mentioned very briefly earlier on, you know, about the orientation of your house and just making the maximizing that passive solar energy gain that we can get.
Definitely.
Opening the curtains with the sun.
Yes. Yeah, so that's really interesting. Passive solar gain is really, I mean, it's free, right? So it's really great if you can utilize it. And I was just thinking, we visited a really cool sustainable house in Whanganui a couple of years ago, and they introduced to us this interesting concept of living with the house. So kind of using the house to maximize the passive energy, so sun. So what you would do, for example, in the winter, if there's spaces of your house that you never go to, you just keep those sort of closed off and maybe air them out every once in a little while. But what you're doing is kind of creating corridors for the heat to move through the house to the places where you want it to go, as opposed to heating up a massive room that you're not actually using very often. So just thinking about if I want heat, if the heat comes in, if the sun comes in the kitchen and I want it to go through the bedroom, what doors do I need to close so I can move it through the house to the bedroom, for example? So there's cool little ways that you can just change your indoor environment to facilitate that that flow of warm air through your house.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And then, of course, at night, you know, shutting the curtains as well, and at dusk time.
Yep.
So we're not losing all that heat again.
That's right. Yeah. And depending on how into it you are, you can, if the sun is shining on one side of the house and not the other side of the house, for example, you could shut the curtains in the non-sun side of the house, and that keeps that warm. Air that the sun heats up inside the house, and then as it moves around, the sun moves around the house, you can kind of like shift the curtains and all those kinds of things. Just depends how much you stay at home.
Yeah. Anyway, but all these things, they all make a difference, don't they? So
yes, and it's you just look around your house and you think, and you just have to think, is heat escaping through that little hole, or could I put this on a cold wash, or just little things like that, just to help make it's basically making any form of heating you do put into the house more effective. So how do you keep it in the house longer is the biggest thing.
Right. Yes. So I guess, you know, this gives people lots of time. We can all be looking ahead, and we've got our time to make all these changes.
Yes.
And now, there's one thing that's been on the media in Northern Ireland quite a bit, and people have been complaining about tenants. If they complain to their landlord, they can have their tenancy cancelled. Oh. Not immediately, but just not renewed. And I was just wondering if there's any kind of protection for people here in the
Yes, because I definitely know that's a big problem in the UK. And I think in New Zealand we have slightly better tenancy protections around that kind of thing. The main thing is that your landlord has to give you notice if they're going to end the lease early. So that's in the legislation. And if that doesn't happen, so if they don't give you adequate notice, so it has to be 90 days, I think, for a standard lease, then you can take it to the tenancy tribunal or things like that. So you can escalate it if you want, but there are protections in there to stop the lease being terminated early. And certainly, I think I have to double check, but in the new minimum standards that came in this year, I'm quite certain they had a clause in there which said so tenants are allowed to ask for insulation to be installed because it has to be done by 2019. And I think in there they've put in a clause which says landlords can't take retaliatory measures, though they're not particularly specific about what those are. MB is working with, I think it might be through the Tenancy Tribunal, but they might also be setting up an independent organisation committee to sort of mediate that. So they can't... Yeah, it says they can't take retaliatory measures, so, you know, that might be things like quitting the lease or increasing the rent or those kinds of things, just because you asked. So I don't think they can do that. And, so there are a few protections, and certainly if you feel like you're in a situation where you don't think your rights are being upheld, and you're not sure, the Community Law Centre in Dunedin probably would be a good place, or Citizens Advice Bureau. There are, and online, the tenancy website are certainly places you can go to find out and then see the process you could go through to make sure that doesn't, you know, happen.
It's great. Yeah. Great. But hopefully it doesn't go to that.
Yes, and, hopefully not.
And we've got all of these things that people can do to make their homes warm for next winter. So thank you so much, Letitia, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And have a wonderful Christmas.
I will, thank you.
And I think we can both perhaps wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Mm-hmm. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And thank you for listening to this show with my guest, Letitia Nicholas. I'm Maureen Howard, and this is Eco Living in Action on Otago Access Radio. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it as a podcast from the Otago Access Radio website at oar.org.nz. And Eco Living in Action is supported by Sustainable Dunedin City. So have a lovely Christmas, and I'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. As they affect our city, Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to www.sustainabledunedincity.org.
To a wheel, wooden rim, the axle groans at least six times a day. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milky Boys. Keep them logs rolling down, for we'll drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. Sweats and strains most all day. Now 20 miles of track to feed the mill. Stoker keeps the firebox full with the offcuts from the day, so that later on she'll make that 3 mile hill. The mill first does strip and bark the logs, and sends them to the benchman standing by. He slips the mill saw through, never mind what slips and pokes. It's then that you'll see the chips and the sawdust fly. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milky Boys. Keep them logs rolling down, for we'll drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. When the weather's fine, they'll be down at the Hamblin side. When a nor'wester comes on and it's down to Flinders Bay, through grueling surf you'll see them big ships spray. Spare a thought for us chaps who work an hour. Next time you walk the streets of a London town, in the forest, in the mill, on the line and in the yard, just to keep them damn logs rolling down. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milky Boys. Keep them logs rolling down, for we'll drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London. Across. just got through just to show what we can do.